Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. This segment originally aired in Jacob Hilken's case update on February 22, 2021. After that episode was released, I was overwhelmed by the amount of listeners who commented or sent me messages, telling me why this interview helped them realize why they were struggling to process a loss in their own lives. To be honest, it helped me too with a loss in my life. I was also asked by some to publish this as its own piece, so it could be found and shared more easily within the podcast feed. When I decided to do this segment, I thought it could be helpful to some people listening, but I never guessed how many people would be so deeply impacted by listening to this. And I'm grateful to all of you who took the time to write me so many thoughtful messages about how hearing this helped you in one way or another. I wanted to take some time here to discuss ambiguous loss, because this is what the families you hear on the show are struggling with. Whether their loved one is still missing or they have found some remains, they are still left with many unanswered questions. Ambiguous loss is defined as loss without closure or clear understanding. It's a kind of loss that leaves a person searching for answers and complicates or delays the process of grieving, leaving people with unresolved grief. We decided to bring back Dr. Philip Taft, who was previously contributed to the show. Dr. Taft maintains a practice in Texas and has extensive professional experience. You can find more information about him in the episode notes.
I'm Philip Taft, and I'm a licensed clinical and forensic psychologist. I practice out of my primary office in Corsicana, Texas. I work in the clinical realm, helping people with difficulties that would be in outpatient nature. So things like depression and anxiety, bipolar disorder. And in the forensic realm, I provide consultation for legal circumstances in civil and criminal courts, sometimes family courts, but I also provide evaluations and expert testimony. And this is what I love to do, and I'm grateful to get to do it.
Dr. Taft told us more about ambiguous loss.
Well, ambiguous loss is a term that was actually coined by a psychologist named Pauline Boss sometime, I believe, in the 70s. And there's two forms of ambiguous loss. And one is when the loss is with someone who is physically present, but psychologically absent. And this would be somebody who has maybe dementia. You've lost them. They're still physically there, but they're psychologically absent. The other side of ambiguous loss, as defined by Dr. Boss, was someone who is psychologically still there with you, but physically they're not. And the most stark situation with regard to this is someone who is missing, someone who has vanished. And again, this is all forms of ambiguous loss are likely to throw somebody into what we call complicated grief. The brain is impacted through our beliefs and our thoughts about things. Our beliefs and our thoughts about things will ultimately result in our feelings about a situation and our physiological response to that situation.
Losing someone is always a hard thing to go through, but it's something we all experience in our lives and try to work through. Dr. Taft explained why it's harder for people to move through all of the stages of grief when they suffer an ambiguous loss.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross identified five stages of grief that kind of is one of our major models of grief. And when someone has ambiguous loss, the problem is that they may move through the first four stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, but they can't easily achieve. It makes it very difficult to achieve acceptance. And that's that final stage where you explore your options in life, you develop new plans, and you move on, never forgetting the person and staying connected to them, but moving on and not being stuck in one of those earlier stages or moving back and forth between the stages. when someone has any form of loss, but especially ambiguous loss, it throws their literal brain, their neuropsychology, into a state of shock and trauma. It releases trauma-inducing chemicals. And when you think about when we're traumatized, we enter into kind of that animal brain status where we might fight, flight, or freeze. And I know this is very simplistic, but if you think about it, most people in ambiguous loss, not all, but most will be for a longer period of time stuck in that frozen state where they can't move forward and they can't reach acceptance. I think that all of us might be able to have more compassion and empathy for someone like this now, because I think globally and culturally, we are all going through a form of ambiguous loss right now. With COVID-19, there's probably not one person that hasn't been touched with ambiguous loss right now. Just putting yourself in the shoes of somebody else is a challenging task. But when you've literally walked in those shoes, it makes it a whole lot easier. So thinking just, you know, about yourself right now and realizing how upsetting it is that you've lost connections in your life through organizations that you used to be working together shoulder to shoulder in, or maybe your faith and being able to collectively worship in your faith, being able to have family gatherings, all of those losses that we've had, and we could go on and on about them, they're ambiguous right now because we don't know when this is ever going to end. Think about how that's impacted you. Your anxiety is up, your uncertainty is up, you're angry, sometimes we're in denial. But just like loss, and especially ambiguous loss, everyone responds differently. Everyone is dealing with this differently. And I think just understanding the impact of this event could help you to really stretch a little further and see, wow, imagine losing somebody in your life that you cared deeply about or loved deeply, and you didn't know what happened to them. You didn't have a funeral, you didn't have a coffin. What would that be like? If COVID-19 has hit us like this, imagine the intensity and the chronicity of that in that person's life. And I bet you would have a whole lot more compassion now than ever before. Several people in my practice during COVID-19 who lost a loved one either through suicide or through a tragic incident, and it really complicated their grieving process that they weren't able to have the same type of funeral we normally would. But also, friends and family didn't show for fear of catching COVID. And so they were really isolated in this grieving process. One of the major ways to heal in grief is through community, through connecting to those who are alive, to those who are still in my circle of family and friends. And how much more complicated has that become for those who are grieving right now? The mind really wants to have certainty. And it's very troubling. It's very troubling to us psychologically. Neuropsychologically, through brain chemistry, it releases those stress chemicals globally throughout our body. It lessens our body's ability to have the normal daily functions operating properly, such as sleeping, such as eating, such as feeling rested. It affects our mood. It can put us into something that looks just like depression or something that looks just like post-traumatic stress disorder. It elevates our anxiety, our fearfulness, our uncertainty, and it can kind of get us stuck in that state, especially in these cases where it gets complicated and enduring. It can leave a person almost like the walking dead. They're continuing to get up. They're continuing to go to work or to live their life, but they're literally numb and encased. And the brain is releasing chemicals, but the psyche or the mind is also releasing protective barriers. And so we see people sometimes in these circumstances withdrawing from others, isolating themselves, dropping out of organizations. We see them either gaining a lot of weight or losing a lot of weight. They could develop a clinical condition like depression or post-traumatic stress disorder or an anxiety disorder, and even worse. So it's a massive impact.
I often hear from families that are featured on the show that they second-guess themselves or even blame themselves for what has happened. Had they done something differently, could this all have been avoided? Had I checked on them sooner, talked to them a little bit longer on the day they disappeared? The list goes on and on. Dr. Taft explained why it is so common to feel this way.
It is very common for people to blame themselves, to feel guilt when something bad happens in their life, period. When they lose a loved one, when that loved one is missing, or when they've lost a loved one, even though they're found, even though their body is found. The mind, primary function of the mind is to protect us, to keep us from pain and discomfort, and to move us toward less pain or pleasure. And the mind is very good at doing this. And I know it sounds bizarre, because how could blaming yourself and feeling guilty be in some way pleasurable or in some way comforting? And that's because the mind literally makes an instantaneous decision without our awareness to decide what is less painful than the alternative. And so, for example, when you've lost somebody, it's less painful to blame yourself, and it's less painful to feel guilt about it and to rehearse it over and over and over and what you could have done different to prevent it than it is to feel out of control. So the mind says, I would rather go ahead and blame Philip for this action and rehearse what Philip could have done different, because that gives the mind something we desperately need every day of our life, which is a sense of control. And so in that sense, the mind comforts us by blaming us, comforts us by cycling what we could have done, comforts us with guilt. And as a therapist, what I try to help people understand is our job is to take better care of ourselves than our mind would do, because our mind is kind of an automatic protective device for us. So if our mind is blaming us and we're feeling guilty and we're feeling lost in the rehearsing of what we could have done different, what we can do is we can realize, okay, that's just my defense mechanisms trying to protect me and give me a sense of control. And instead, what I've got to do is I've got to move towards something that is much more healthy for me. So through my intentional self versus my automatic mind functioning, I'm going to choose to forgive myself. I'm going to pray when I think about this and let this go. I'm going to recite that meaningful scripture or that memorable quote. I'm going to listen to music. I'm going to talk to a friend instead of just cycling guilt and blame. In that sense, my intentional self can help me to override the quick fix of the mind cure of blame and guilt.
Grief and loss are topics that are hard for a lot of people to discuss. If you've lost someone, those close to you may not know the right words to say, so they say nothing at all, which can feel very isolating at a time when you need support the most. Dr. Taft told us how we can help others through this process.
We're all dealing with something. I think that when you're looking at other people and what we can do to help people in ambiguous grief or in any grief situation, it's really hard to know what to do. And so what happens is we tend to avoid people who are grieving because we don't know what to say. And so I tell people, have really big ears and a really small mouth. The most important medicine for the soul of another human being is listening. And we don't get much of that in this day and age. So when you have a friend who's grieving or a loved one who's grieving, probably it's best to start with, would you like for me to bring it up? Or would you prefer we just continue to go on as we always have in our relationship? You know, hanging out, going to restaurants, sharing in activities together, spending time together. Because a lot of people in grief do not want someone coming up to them with those big tearful eyes and that heavy heart and saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. They get that intensely and it ignites their grief again and their fight, flight, and freeze mechanisms again. So I find it best to just be who you were before the loss and ask that person what would help them the most. Tell me about how I can be good to you and good for you and connect to you through this process. That person can say straight up, I don't want you to keep bringing it up, or I need you to keep asking me about it because it helps me. Everyone's different, and getting impatient or trying to make them grieve my way, judge them about how they're grieving, that is very unhelpful to them. And that is to realize the goal here is to move toward acceptance. And one of the major forces of acceptance is be active. So if it helps you to be active in searching for your loved one, if they've gone missing, then continue to do that as long as it's not destroying other parts of your life, like your ability to work and to love. If it helps you to form an organization to, you know, maybe form something that gives you a purpose for this person's life, go for it. Let that little fire be built into something that gives you a life mission. If it helps you to visit the gravesite every day, go do that. But the main thing is trying not to avoid moving forward in your life, trying not to get isolated, trying not to withdraw, trying not to walk through the days like a zombie, but instead trying to chisel out a purpose. Because all suffering puts us into the throes of either a major life setback or a major life change that could be for the positive. And if we take that purpose and we say, the suffering led me to this purpose, then I would be encouraging anyone who comes to see me, what does the suffering take you to that could really add to and enhance the life of others and your life? That can really move people toward acceptance. Yeah, this is maybe the most important thing for us who are going through ambiguous loss. But also when we have someone who's a friend or a loved one going through it, what could be done about it to bring it to that acceptance phase earlier than later, or to assist somebody going through the process toward that to help them in that regard. The individual, the person going through ambiguous loss, is best to understand themselves, to realize that their mind now has stress chemicals activated, and they're going to be challenged to function as well as they normally would. They're going to have a desire to possibly fight, flight, or freeze. So if they're having a desire to automatically withdraw from everything, or they feel like, you know, they're kind of frozen, or they become aggressive and angry and explosive, they must realize that is their chemical reaction, and that is their neuropsychology functioning. And instead, what they can do is they can try to adhere through their intentional self to a regular program of exercise, trying to do everything they can to enhance their sleep, trying to eat even though they may not be hungry, or try to curb eating if they're having that kind of self-nurturing eating, that these are the things that we could choose versus the things that we feel like. So when you follow your feelings, often that's the psyche saying, here's the quick fix, withdraw. Here's the quick fix, do nothing. You know, be frozen or paralyzed. Just take on the world and bite everyone's head off. If these symptoms persist for a person and they're kind of feeling stuck in grief and loss, they might reach out to their doctor and seek medication in a temporary measure. Community is probably the most important thing. So continuing to go out into your organizations, continuing to adhere to your schedule and go to work and relate to your peers, even though you don't feel like it, continuing to go to worship, forming a community online. So right now with COVID being so restricted, it's a safe place to go and type in, you know, support group for grief, support group specifically for ambiguous grief. They're forming a community with other people who are going through or have been through something like what you're going through. Really helps people to move through and forward to acceptance. Understanding that a lot of people turn to drugs and alcohol, but all that does is enhance the possibility that you're going to stay stuck and frozen. It may feel better that day or that moment when you do the drugs or alcohol, but you're going to need more and more of that to maintain that feeling, and it's going to tear down your psychological, your spiritual, and your physical self. In that situation, when these symptoms continue and you might find yourself turning to things like that, it might be time to reach out to a therapist, a professional therapist, to seek help. That professional therapist can certainly work with you individually, but should also be encouraging you to get into your community, to get into a support group. Because individual therapy in and of itself is not enough to recover from grief. So they should be encouraging you to gather with your family, to gather with your friends, to gather with your community.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.